You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition. We didn't have a show yesterday. We were preempted by our Board of Trustees for the Dallas County Community College District. Today, I want to first talk about briefly the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. He was primarily a conservative, and that's what I think is overlooked. Most of the time, he voted with the 5-4 conservative majority in the court. The court has been very much divided 5-4 on most issues. The exception for Kennedy was on certain social issues, specifically concerning abortion and gay marriage. He tended to vote with the liberal group in the Supreme Court. So with his retirement, and it depends who you appoint, and I want to caution everybody, you've had conservative presidents, Ronald Reagan being a good example, but even George Bush, who thought they were appointing someone that shared most, if not all, of their, let's say, political philosophy, only to find out later that the so-called conservative wasn't a conservative, or wasn't nearly as conservative as they thought. And you really don't know. There's no way really to test this, because people do change. For many reasons, they will change, especially when you're dealing with an appointment that can last 20, 30, 40 years. And many of these justices live and serve into the 80s, and one, I think, retired when he was 90. So you need to keep that in mind. Why both the left and the right in this country are, I won't say celebrating, that's the wrong word, they're reacting to what's happening. You got to keep in mind that people's philosophies, ideologies are modified, are changed, and there's no sure thing. There's no guarantee here. That's why it's rather critical that, in this case, President Trump requested from several conservative groups, namely the Federalist and the Heritage Foundation, recommendations, and he's added to them. He has a list today of 25 outstanding people to choose from. And what you do is start with that list and winnow it down to a short list, usually of two or three, maybe as many as four. And then the president interviews them and makes a decision one way or the other. So there's going to be a President Trump in regards to immigration, said an extreme vetting process. You're going to have an extreme vetting process here by the president. I think he will nominate a replacement for Justice Kennedy, who retires the end of July, so in about a month. You know, I would urge the president to be very deliberate about this, take his time, but at the soonest he can make a decision and is happy with the decision to announce it, and ideally the confirmation hearings, the hearings of the Senate will occur in the August-September timeframe, maybe earlier. And I wish him well in doing this. Now, I'm not going to read the list. I do have, for new listeners to this show, and before I forget, this is somewhat of a milestone show. This is show 1100. I'm getting better, or at least I perceive myself of getting better. And at some point, hopefully not in the distant future, but some point, I will be on commercial radio. Right now, I'm on web radio. You can listen free when I broadcast the show, as well as listen as a podcast. And I would say probably, if not 100%, 99% of the people that listen to this show listen to it as a podcast at their convenience. And the way you do that is to go to my companion blog for the show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll see under my photograph the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And usually I have the show posted, if not the day I present it, usually the next day. And if it's a weekend situation, by 5 o'clock Saturday. And I will have caught up. I'm a little bit behind, but not much. I got, after I give this show, I have two shows to get up. And at least one, if not two, will be posted tonight. The remaining one will be posted Friday, probably in the afternoon. So that's how you listen to the show. But the reason I point this out for new listeners is I want you to make up your own mind. I'm giving you my opinions, my take, if you will, commentary on news events that interest me. I select which stories I want to opine on, if you will, because there are literally hundreds of news stories every day, and I focus on those news stories that I can maybe add some perspective to. Sometimes, though, you have news stories that are breaking, and we do have a breaking news story that I'll get into a few minutes from now, that dominate the news. And that's the case here. We've had another shooting, this one in Maryland, and I will touch upon it. But I first wanted to comment on the retirement. I think, don't know for sure, but I think that if President Trump appoints someone that's truly conservative and is pro-life, then it looks like there's a very good chance that Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court decision, will be overturned. And I'm thankful that that will happen, because I'm of the opinion, I think power and decision-making should be the closest to the citizens as possible. So it's really up to the state to decide what laws pertain to abortion or the killing of babies in the womb. I would leave it up to the states. And that means some states will have very liberal abortion laws. I don't approve of them, but if that's what the people, they elect their representatives, and if they pass the laws, you're going to have that. California, New York, for example, are two examples of this, Illinois being another one. Other states won't. The majority of states will not. There'll be various restrictions, and in some states, absolute bans on it. So that's a possibility. I thought Roe versus Wade was not decided correctly. Somewhat of a sloppy decision, but I don't want to get into the details of Roe versus Wade, because this is going to come up. And again, it depends on who is, first of all, nominated for the position, and then he has to face questioning by senators. And the Democrats are going to resist anybody that has a record that is definitely pro-life. So expect opposition, and there will be the usual propaganda tearing down whoever is nominated by Trump to replace Kennedy. Now, I want to emphasize, because I think a lot of people are not aware that Kennedy voted with the conservatives the majority of the time. It was only on certain social issues that he went with the liberals. Now, the liberal Democrats, they're not happy with this retirement. It's not unexpected. The thinking was he was going to retire last year. He didn't. Decided to wait, and now he's definitely given his letter of resignation to the president and will be retiring again and effective 31 July as a full-time justice. So that's the news, and really was focused in on yesterday for sure, but even today, and we're getting a lot of reactions. What's interesting, I don't get into this, because I think most people, unfortunately, don't have a very good understanding of the role of the Supreme Court, and really couldn't name one justice, forget about all nine and where they stand. And I see no point in going over the names of the 25 people on Trump's list. If you want to, you can read the names, because most people don't know And when I say most people, I'd say 99 out of 100 don't know where these judges stand on various issues. Really, this is primarily of interest to attorneys, especially those that specialize in constitutional law. It is interest to politicians because, again, and we're seeing this, and we'll see this later in the show, elections have consequences, and because Donald Trump nominated a judge, got confirmed, and is now in that 5-4 majority, and will, a fairly young man, will probably be there at least another 20 years, health permitting, it looks like Donald Trump will appoint definitely two, but maybe three, and if he has two terms, maybe four justices, which would mean would swing the Supreme Court balance not from 5-4, but to 7-2, maybe. And that's the worst nightmare. See, I'm not for activist judges, judges that are trying to legislate from the bench at all levels. I want a judge to interpret the law, but many of them want to change the law. And that simply, in my mind, is not the function of a Supreme Court justice. So I wish Justice Kennedy well, and I hope President Trump takes this opportunity to, if he can nominate another Gorsuch, a lot of conservatives, I think, that are still on the fence will come over to him. So be very careful, be very deliberate. And remember, and don't forget, that whoever you appoint has to get through, and this will be a very, how shall I say, difficult confirmation process. But I think whoever he nominates will get confirmed. The only thing that could maybe trip him up is if the Republicans lose the Senate. I don't think that's going to happen. There was a poll that was out where about 90% or at 90% of Republicans are agreeing with what Trump's doing. That is very indicative of a much higher turnout come November. And that bodes well for the Republican Party. But we're too far away from November to really see. The Democrats were trying to convince you with their big lie media that there's a big blue wave that's going to wipe out the House of Representatives and the Senate, turn it to Democrat. I think that's a lot of wishful thinking. That is the conventional wisdom, that in midterm elections, the party that lost the presidency picks up seats. And that's usually true. But usually doesn't mean always. And it largely depends on getting out the vote, who the candidates are. Turnout is absolutely key, especially in midterm elections. So you want an enthusiastic voter base. And Trump had a rally last night, and he's had several rallies. And the enthusiasm for amongst his supporters is somewhat contagious. And I think as if President Trump keeps this up and increases these types of rallies as Election Day approaches, there might be some surprises. I would not surprise me if the Republicans increase the number of House seats. That is not what is expected at all. And most likely picks up several, 2, 3, 4 maybe, in the Senate. So instead of a big blue wave, I think you might see a red wave. The only thing I caution you were many months, several months. You got July, August, September, October. That's 4 months and about 10 days. So what? 130 days, roughly? That's an eternity in politics. And what you're seeing right now is primaries to try to pick the candidate. The candidate is key. And if you have good candidates that are articulate, can get the message out, and their message resonates with the people, they'll get elected. To the extent that you have poor candidates, poor communicators, don't have a good message, and the other thing to keep in mind is money. It's very difficult, and I'm going on and on about this, but there's one point, I almost forgot it, and it's a key point. If you listen to the show, you know I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican. I believe that the biggest problem facing the United States today is government spending is simply out of control. And there's no leadership on this, and both parties are big government parties. The only way to fundamentally change what's wrong in this country, you're going to need a new political party, and that's going to take years to happen. It's not going to happen overnight, and it's not a function of having one person. This is if you're truly going to stand up a successful, viable party, it's going to take years, and it should be truly a national party, but also local as well. So that takes time, but why do I think it will happen? More and more people are leaving both political parties. Keep that in mind. And once that number is over 50% in terms of registered independent, it's at that point you're going to see and hear more stories about people considering organizing and establishing a new political party to challenge both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and fundamentally for constitutional republic, but a government that's limited in its size, scope, and the valid functions of government. It'll take a minimum of 10, if not 20 years to do it, and right now there's no indication that anyone is doing it. When I hear anything about this, I investigate it. And here's something that needs to be said. There's urgency in doing this, because if you're a regular listener of the show or listen to my most recent show, last show, we don't have much time to fundamentally change the direction of this country and deal with the most pressing problems. We simply have wasted too much time and energy, and this affects every American. So it's not going to be one person. It's going to be many people establishing, standing up a new political party. It very much needs to be spontaneous, grassroots. You know, I like to call it the American Independence Party, because most of the people, what they do is they just simply get fed up with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and then register as an independent, or if someone calls them, say they're independent. Doesn't mean they don't lean one way or the other. I frankly will refuse to vote for Democrats and Republicans anymore. It's a waste of time, because I'm very much for limited government. These people do not reflect my political philosophy, my ideology, and they're basically followers with very few leaders, and that's why there's a golden opportunity here for a number of people to come together and set up a new party. And I emphasize this because one of the failings of the Tea Party movement, it didn't take that next step, and that next step was to truly establish a party. What you had is the Republicans trying to co-opt, and unfortunately in some instances they were successful in co-opting the Tea Party, and then you had the Democrats using the IRS to try to starve it in terms of money. So both political parties do not want competition. I want competition, but I want candidates and parties that I can get behind, and I can't get behind either of these. I'm not saying there are not some Republicans that I could vote for. Of course there are. But as a general proposition, I throw the question out. What does the Republican Party stand for? I don't know. Other than big government and bigger budgets for the Department of Defense. And the reason I bring this up is they use appointments to the Supreme Court to try to say, listen, if you don't vote, you're throwing your vote away, because you need to vote Republican so we can have the pick. Well, both parties use that. And it is a persuasive argument. I understand that. But have we had fundamental change? Very little. Now, I'm going to change gears a little. There is a breaking news story. And my first show on the air, unfortunately, you can't listen to it. Somehow it accidentally got deleted, and I don't have a copy of it. Most of the shows I have copies of. Not all, but it was really the first year or two, because I gave a weekly show. But one of my first, I think it was the first show I did, we had at the University of Texas in Austin a shooter. Did he shoot anybody? Yes, he shot himself. Ultimately, he was a suicide. This is many years ago. But I followed it literally as the story was breaking. I was online when the first reports came on and followed it. I learned something very valuable, and this applies to this story. The early reports, they'll have some information right, but a lot of information wrong. And it usually takes a couple of days minimum before you get the basic facts. And even then, you got to be very, very careful, because people have agendas and they want to look good. So we have today another shooter. The preliminary information, there are definitely fatalities. The police are not saying how many. Reports are there are five fatalities, five people that were killed. They do have the shooter, the suspect, under arrest. They're questioning him. Apparently, they found him hiding under a desk. So he's in custody. Now, when you initially have this kind of situation, the police have to go in and determine how many bad guys are there. Is just one shooter, or is this two or three? And then you got to find them. And then you have to escort out of the building, the people that aren't hurt, walking out, and you see the pictures, and you're seeing them here, the people with their hands up, and you have to deal with the fact that you're going to have people that are seriously injured, and there are several that are seriously injured. This person shot through glass and killed a number of people, injured a number of people. Apparently, it wasn't well planned. And this is in Maryland, near, it's in Annapolis. It's at a newsroom paper. The Baltimore Sun owns the Capital Gazette, and they were the first online web newspaper. And we don't know what motivated this person to do it. Maybe he was unhappy with a news story. Who knows? A lot of times, it's personal. Maybe he was a former employee. Maybe he was fired. I'm speculating here. No one knows. Now, the police probably have a good idea, but you don't know what he said, if anything, to the police. So we're lacking a lot of details. Usually, within 24 to 48 hours, you probably got about 80% of the information. You don't have everything. And one thing to keep in mind that usually doesn't come out, if it does come out at all, is many of these people do have mental problems, mental issues. Many of them are seeing a doctor and are being treated with drugs, prescribed drugs. And unfortunately, with these drugs, while they help many, many people, some people, they make them homicidal and suicidal. Now, if the report is true that the suspect was found hiding under a desk, doesn't sound like he was suicidal. He definitely was homicidal. So we don't know the motivation. We don't know if he's a terrorist or is this a work-related attack. And that's what I caution you. I don't jump to conclusions. Apparently, he's a male and young, and that tends to fit the profile. The people that do this tend to be male and tend to be young. Teenagers into their 20s, some cases 30s, and many, many times they are on prescribed medication. And what happens, either they don't take their medication, and that causes them to engage in homicidal activity and ultimately leading to suicide. A lot of them do that, and we don't know this. We don't know anything about it. Now, I'm sure the left in this country, the gun grabbers, are going to make this. They'll take this opportunity to, we need to ban guns. It's already going to happen. Guns are not the problem. Guns are inanimate objects. Guns do not walk into a building and shoot people. People, whatever their mental state, walk into buildings and shoot people. And we have to face up to that. And the response should not be to disarm law-abiding citizens. We need to protect the American people and allow them to defend themselves. It's especially true in high-crime neighborhoods. So I'm a strong advocate for the Second Amendment. And I was reading that there's estimated 400 million weapons, guns, rifles, pistols, in the United States. The population in the United States is about 330 million. Now, I find that to be good. Why? You must rely on yourself and defend yourself, your family, your property against the criminals, the drug dealers in your neighborhoods. And the people that need guns the most are who? The victims of these killers. And it's usually in low-income minority neighborhoods, black and Hispanic, that are victimized. The last thing you should be doing is trying to disarm law-abiding citizens and take their Second Amendment rights away, but that is what the left does. They go after the guns. We'll see what they do in this case. We need more information, obviously. The difference in this case, this is a work environment. It's not a school. It's not a gun-free zone. I say that, I don't know whether this building is a gun-free zone. It has multiple tenants. One of the common denominators is when people go on these rampages, these so-called mass shootings where four or more people are killed, it's usually a gun-free zone. Now, not necessarily in Texas, because in Texas, there are many schools, especially in rural areas, that allow the teachers and staff to have weapons because they can't wait 30 minutes or an hour for the sheriff to show up because there's only limited amount of law enforcement available, and they have to. The counties are large in Texas, so if you're in a rural area, you have to be able to defend yourself, and that includes teachers defending their students from a stranger or even a friend walking in and starting shooting up the school. So we have another mass shooting. It seems like we have a lot of these. Actually, we don't. It gets more attention today because of the internet and news. I don't watch the television news. Now, I'm in the newsroom. There's always a newscast being broadcast. Usually it's tuned to either Fox or CNN, sometimes C-SPAN. At home, I don't watch television because what I found over the years that especially the television networks, their news is biased. You better believe it. It's not, in my mind, it's not accurate and objective. It's propaganda, largely progressive propaganda to support the Democratic Party and its candidates. So I save the aggravation and don't bother watching it. And that's what's happened to newspapers as well as television. More and more people are switching them off or not buying the papers. They will search out information that they're interested in. They'll use the internet to do that. That's what I do every day preparing this show. Doesn't mean I don't look at newspapers. I do. Doesn't mean I don't look at certain segments of television shows. I certainly do. Just go to my show prep for this and you'll see I do, because I want to make up my own mind, and I search out different people with differing opinions to try to find out what are the facts, what really happened. And it's difficult to do that. I'll be the first one to say sometimes that's the most frustrating thing. I'm after the facts, as are most of the people that search out the news today. You got to do your homework. You can't rely on anybody. And many people will lie to you. And it's especially the case today in the news business. And they're only hurting themselves, because once someone understands that you've lied to them, not once, but several times, they don't trust you anymore. And invariably what that means is they don't watch you, they don't read you anymore. And that applies to politicians as well. And many politicians haven't learned that. They're starting to learn that. YouTube, for example, there's memory there. You can check what someone said, not months ago, but years ago. So I warn you on breaking news stories like this shooting in Maryland at the Capitol Gazette. More and more information will come out. And to the extent that we get significantly, it would be Monday because there's no Friday show, I will update you on that. Now, I want to switch gears. That's the breaking news story, and we're still getting information on it, and we will be for probably days, if not weeks. Today in Congress, the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, appeared in front of the House Judiciary Committee to answer questions. What's very frustrating, and I share the frustration of the representatives and the senators, I thought with a Republican administration that the bad habits of the Obama Justice Department would change, and that the Department of Justice and the FBI would be forthcoming. Our representatives have been asking for information now for starting last August. And there are a number of committees. You have the Intelligence Committee, you have the Judiciary Committee in the House, in the Senate, you have the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee. There are several committees, Senate and House, that are investigating what happened. And I call it today is the Democratic collusion delusion. For almost 2 years, the mantra out of big lie media, the propaganda machine of the television networks and the newspapers, was that Donald Trump had colluded, whatever that means, with the Russians, namely Putin. To date, and I'm open-minded about this, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I didn't vote for either Trump or Hillary Clinton. I think Hillary Clinton should be in prison. So just so you know where I'm coming from. But if there's evidence, and I mean evidence, not hearsay, not speculation, not allegations, I mean solid, rock-solid evidence, testimony that they have that candidate Trump conspired with the Russians, bring it on. They haven't been able to do that. Did that surprise me? No, it didn't surprise me. Because what I believe what happened is there was a conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy, not collusion, a criminal conspiracy at the highest levels of government involving Clinton, Obama, and Democrats. And they had two primary goals. One was absolutely essential. They wanted to exonerate Clinton. I'm talking Hillary Clinton. You can't have a presidential candidate that's under FBI investigation. So some way, somehow, they had to make sure she was not prosecuted. And the fix was in. Now, I'm not going to go over that again. I've done this several times. And most Americans don't know the details. But the bottom line is what? If it were anybody else and you didn't have the fix, they would have been prosecuted. They would have impaneled the grand jury and prosecuted her. And I think found her guilty because she truly committed crimes. There's a long list of 18 to 20 of them. The most serious ones are the mishandling of classified information, obstruction of justice, namely destroying evidence, destroying government records and her emails, lying about it, and the higher-ups in the FBI, including the FBI director, the deputy FBI director, as well as the attorney general and the deputy attorney general, were all in on it. And the orders came from where? The White House. From Barack Obama. They had to get Hillary Clinton off the hook or out from under the FBI investigation. So the word was passed from Barack Obama to Valerie Jarrett to the Attorney General, from the Attorney General to the FBI Director, from the FBI Director to the Deputy FBI Director, and then to the people investigating it. The name you probably heard and is in the news is Peter Strzok. What Congress is trying to narrow in on is how did all this start? That is a key question. I gave you my theory how it started. Part one was to exonerate Hillary Clinton. Part two was what? To frame Donald Trump. The Russian collusion story. And I could give 2 hours on that. I don't have time to do the 2 hours. What I want to do is you to listen to the frustration of several of the representatives in questioning Rod Rosenstein. And I want to play it for you because I'm equally frustrated. I don't know, they're deliberately hiding something because of the fact that it goes right into the White House. They're not getting everything. It's very suspicious. Now, I'm going to play first the questioning by Jordan of Rosenstein. Now, let me switch it around. I'm going to play Gowdy's questioning. Then I have three clips I want to play. Let's go with Trey Gowdy questioning the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from South Carolina, Mr. Gowdy, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Russia investigation has been going on for almost 2 years now. Special counsel's investigation has been going on for over a year now. For most Americans, it's important to know what Russia did to our country in 2016 and with whom, if anyone, they did it. When a foreign state interferes with our democratic electoral process, it should be chance of a lifetime for a law enforcement agent to investigate that, except apparently the one that was actually picked to investigate it. That was Peter Strzok. FBI agent Peter Strzok was picked to lead the FBI's investigation into what Russia did in July of 2016. It was a counterintelligence investigation begun in late July 2016, and he was leading it. And at about the exact same time he was picked to lead it, this dispassionate and fair FBI agent was calling Trump a disaster, destabilizing for the country. I'll leave out all the F adjectives he used to describe that. I'll just go with disaster and destabilizing. Same time, his FBI lawyer girlfriend, Lisa Page, was telling him he was meant to protect the country. This neutral, dispassionate FBI agent said, I can protect the country at many levels. Same time, Peter Strzok, who was picked to objectively, fairly, neutrally look into the Russia investigation, was talking about an insurance policy with Andy McCabe and Lisa Page in the event Donald Trump became the president. All of this was happening at the same time Peter Strzok said he could smell the Trump support in Southern Virginia. All this was at the same time that this FBI agent said a Trump presidency would be effing terrifying and that it will never happen. No, we'll stop it. So while investigating Russia and their attempt to subvert our democracy may have been important to the rest of the country, it wasn't all that important to about a half dozen FBI agents and lawyers who were assigned to the case. For them, it was an investigation to stop Donald Trump, which then brings us to May of 2017 and the appointment of special counsel, where we find Peter Strzok again, this same supposed to be dispassionate, neutral, fair FBI agent. You would think he'd be really excited about investigating what a foreign power tried to do to this country. But you would be wrong again for Peter Strzok at precisely the same time that Bob Mueller was appointed. Precisely the same time. Peter Strzok was talking about his unfinished business and how he needed to fix and finish it so Donald Trump did not become president. He was talking about impeachment within 3 days of special counsel Mueller being appointed. 3 days. That's even quicker than MSNBC and the Democrats were talking about impeaching him. Within 3 days, the lead FBI agent is talking about impeaching the president. So this is where we are. We're 2 years into this investigation. We're a year and a half into the presidency. We're over a year into special counsel. You have a counterintelligence investigation that's become public. You have a criminal investigation that's become political. You have more bias than I have ever seen manifest in a law enforcement officer in the 20 years I used to do it for a living. And four other DOJ employees who had manifest animus towards the person they were supposed to be neutrally and detachedly investigating. Democrats are using this investigation as a presumption of guilt, which I find astonishing. And in the long run, for the health of this republic, I would encourage them to go back to the presumption of innocence that we used to hold sacred. There's a presumption of guilt. There's a desire by Democrat senators to fundraise off of your investigation. More than 60 Democrats have already voted to proceed with impeachment before Bob Mueller has found a single solitary damn thing. More than 60 have voted to move forward with impeachment, and he hasn't presented his first finding. So I'm going to say this to you, Mr. Ray, Mr. Rosenstein. I realize that neither one of you were there when this happened, but you're both there now. Russia attacked this country. They should be the target, but Russia isn't being hurt by this investigation right now. We are. This country is being hurt by it. We are being divided. We've seen the bias. We've seen the bias. We need to see the evidence. If you have evidence of wrongdoing by any member of the Trump campaign, present it to the damn grand jury. If you have evidence that this president acted inappropriately, present it to the American people. There's an old saying that justice delayed is justice denied. I think right now all of us are being denied. Whatever you got, finish it the hell up, because this country is being torn apart. I would yield back, Mr. Chairman.
Either of the witnesses care to respond to the...
Well, I would simply respond, Ms. Gowdy. I certainly share your views about those text messages, and nobody is more offended than I about what's reflected in those messages. With regard to the investigation, I've heard suggestions that we should just close the investigation. I think the best thing we can do is finish it appropriately and reach a conclusion. And I certainly agree with you, sir, that people should not jump to conclusions without seeing the evidence. I've been the victim of fake news attacks myself, so I'm sympathetic. I agree with you, sir, that there's been no allegation made by the Department of Justice or the special counsel other than what's reflected in those documents that are filed publicly, the charged folks. And nobody should draw any conclusions beyond those charges.
I share Trey Gowdy's frustration, and it is undermining and dividing this country, but it's undermining the Department of Justice and the FBI. I don't trust them anymore, and I wouldn't cooperate with them, because at the highest levels of the FBI and the Justice Department, they were corrupted and they were committing criminal acts, using the intelligence community to not only to really frame, that's what they're trying to do. They were trying to dig up dirt and smear candidate Trump. They did a rather awful job of it. They were arrogant, and a lot of information has come out, and they abused the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court by misleading it, by not identifying opposition research that was paid for by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party, instead trying to present it to the court as an intelligence report. And that really hasn't, many people that follow this are aware of all these details, but generally the American public is not. This would never have happened without President, not Trump, but President Obama wanting it to happen. And you notice the White House involvement in it, and they were involved in it, has yet to be brought out. They were unmasking the results of that FISA warrant and unmasking, identifying the names, finding out the names of the people in the Trump campaign that were making telephone calls. They were receiving telephone calls from who? Their Russian ambassador. That happens all the time with the new administration. And I'm talking about General Flynn. Now let's go to Jordan of Ohio. And this gets really heated because Jim Jordan is, let us say, angry.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rosenstein, why are you keeping information from Congress?
Congressman, I'm not keeping any information from Congress that it's appropriate.
In a few minutes, Mr. Rosenstein, I think the House of Representatives is going to say something different.
I don't agree with you, Congressman. I don't believe that's what they're going to say. And if they do, they'll be mistaken.
I disagree, but I think in a few minutes the House of Representatives is going to go on record saying you haven't complied with requests from a separate and equal branch of government, that you haven't complied with subpoenas, and you got 7 days to get your act together. I think that's what's going to happen in a few. And that's not Jim Jordan. I think that's a majority of the House of Representatives. In just a few minutes, I think that's going to happen. And I want to know why you won't give us what we've asked for.
Sir, I certainly hope that your colleagues are not under that impression. That is not accurate, sir.
And you is accurate. We have caught you hiding
Mr. Chairman, can we allow the witness to answer? Mr. Chairman, point of order. We can go to Mr. Jordan's press conference and listen to him, but we came here to hear from the witness.
The time belongs to the gentleman.
Mr. Rosenstein?
Can we allow him to answer?
We have caught you hiding information.
Allow him to answer.
He will be permitted to answer when Mr. Jordan.
Why do we have them here?
We'll allow him additional time to answer.
Why are they not allowed to answer?
The gentleman is out of order. The gentleman from Ohio is recognized.
Mr. Rose, let me make this one point, then I'll let you answer.
Mr. Jordan, I'd like to answer.
Let me make this one point,
sir,
where we've caught you hiding information, then you can answer. Why did you hide the fact that Peter Strzok and Judge Contreras were friends? Why did you redact that in the documents you gave to us? Judge Contreras, kind of important. FISA court judge, more importantly, just as importantly, the judge that heard Mike Flynn's case. Why did you try to hide that from us?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to respond. I've heard you make those sort of allegations publicly on TV.
Mr.
Chairman, he should be given
right
the opportunity.
Now, Mr. Jordan,
it's redacted.
I am the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. Okay? I'm not the person doing the redacting. I'm responsible for responding to your concerns as I have. I have a team with me, sir. It's just a fraction of the team that's doing this work, and whenever you brought issues to my attention, I have taken appropriate steps to remedy them. So your statement that I'm personally keeping information from you, trying to conceal information.
You're the boss, Mr. Rosenstein.
That's correct. And my job is to make sure that we respond to your concerns. We have, sir. Now, I've appointed Mr. Lausch, who is managing that production. And my understanding is it's actually going very well, sir. So I appreciate your concerns.
Again, I think the House of Representatives is going to say otherwise.
But your use of this to attack me personally.
Why did you?
It's not wrong.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. May the witness be permitted to answer the question?
It's not personal.
The gentleman will suspend. The witness is going to have an opportunity to say whatever he wants at the end of Mr. Jordan's 5 minutes. Until the
it is not personal.
5 minutes, they're his time.
I appreciate your service. It's not personal. We just want the information. Why did you tell Peter Strzok not to answer our questions yesterday? When I asked Peter Strzok if he'd ever communicated with Glenn Simpson. He gave us the answer he gave us dozens of times. On advice of FBI counsel, I can't answer that question. Why couldn't he answer that question?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate your sincere concerns, but I didn't give Peter Strzok any instructions. If there was some problem with the instructions he had, I'll be happy to look into it.
Now, there's a point here that I've noticed people in power use. Well, I didn't instruct him. I've heard that from Obama. I've heard it from other people in administrations. No, they didn't do it personally. They had their assistant do it. That's what you got to keep in mind. They'll lie. They'll mislead you. Obama with a straight face, I didn't call James Comey. No, didn't have to. It has his loyal servant, friend, close companion that he trusts, Valerie Jarrett, make the phone call to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General makes the phone call, or one of her assistants makes the phone call to the FBI director. That's how they play the game. And then they can say, I didn't call him, I didn't tell him, I didn't direct him. And see, Jordan's making the key point. Sir, you're in charge. Why is Strzok repeatedly not answering, not being responsive to the questions? And what you need to understand, the day before they had, behind closed doors, because some of the information is classified, he was questioned. Not under oath. He came in voluntarily, at least for now. And they didn't get, I won't say nothing, they got next to nothing, because question after question after question, on the advice of FBI counsel, I won't answer that question. That's how they play the game. I would fire this deputy. It was a bad hire. He might be a great administrator, but the FBI and the Department of Justice are hiding some critical information that Congress has been trying to get, not only this committee, but the Intelligence Committee and the Senate Judiciary Committee. I used to negotiate, and I still remember this. And this was a major negotiation. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. It's the F-15 weapon system. And I was part of a team. And we weren't getting information. We requested, and we had a long list of information. We were being stonewalled by the contractor. And we were entitled to this information. We had a general officer write McDonald, and chapter and verse, we laid out what we weren't getting. Well, you see, there are two tactics. One is don't give any information. That's not the smart way to go, by the way. It doesn't work very well. Or you give them tons of information. You overwhelm them with information. But what you don't do is give them the key information. And that's exactly what's going on here. And Congress knows what's going on. What you really want to know is what kicked off, what instigated this intelligence investigation. The timing is critical, and the documents pertaining to that are critical. And I get back to the point, the FBI director nor the attorney general would have exonerated Hillary Clinton. They would never have done that unless the president of the United States wanted it. Them to do it, because there were tons of evidence to convict her. And that was step one. Step two was what they were afraid of. They knew that foreign actors, namely the Russians and other countries, got access to Hillary Clinton's email server. And what they were afraid of, as the campaign approached election day, the Russians would disclose that information, not all of it, but key bits that would embarrass Hillary Clinton. So what motivated this counterintelligence, this investigation, was to have an early warning that the Russians were giving them information. The problem with that story is it never happened. But in so trying to hopefully catch Donald Trump, they committed crimes. They misled the FISA court as to what they were doing. It was definitely a criminal conspiracy. The intelligence community was involved. You're using government, people, property, resources against your political opponents. That's a crime. It goes right into the Oval Office. It starts with the president, and it goes up and down the various departments. The CIA was involved, the National Director of Intelligence was involved, the National Security Advisor was involved, as was the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, the FBI Director, the Deputy FBI Director. This was a conspiracy. They all thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win, and they could hide it from the American people. The American people are demanding justice because they know Hillary Clinton was guilty of sin. Now, let me continue with Congressman Jordan.
What is FBI lawyers saying,
Mr. Jordan? When you find some problem with a production or with questions, it doesn't mean that I'm personally trying to conceal something from you. It means we're running an organization that's trying to follow the rules, and we're going to respond.
You know what was interesting? When I asked him if he'd ever talked to Bruce Orr, he said he had. Said he had three times in 2016 and 2017. Then I asked him, have you ever talked to Nellie Orr? And he said, no, I haven't. I said, well, why can you answer that question? Because Nellie Orr worked for Glenn Simpson, worked for Fusion. He could answer that question, but he couldn't answer, because FBI counsel told him he couldn't. He couldn't answer the question whether he'd ever communicated with Glenn Simpson, a journalist. Why couldn't he answer that question?
Mr. Jordan, I appreciate you saying it isn't personal. Sometimes it feels that way. How do I know, sir? I mean, you interviewed Mr. Strzok. I didn't, so I can't
works answer. Works for you. Doesn't work for us.
This is a point. If this was in a courtroom, a judge would order Peter Strzok to disclose it. Now, he might take his Fifth Amendment rights. See, that's the problem here. This is an imbalanced. It favors what's going on here is the bureaucracy has the advantage, and they are hiding something. I don't know. What I think they are hiding, I'll speculate here, is some of the documents that truly show the involvement of the White House, the Attorney General, and other people. So they'll disclose things that are inconsequential, but hide things that are consequential.
There are 115,000 people who work for me, sir.
Mr. Rosenstein, did you threaten staffers on the House Intelligence Committee? Media reports indicate you did.
Media reports are mistaken.
Sometimes. But this is what they said. Having the nation's number one law enforcement officer threaten to subpoena your calls and emails is downright chilling. Did you threaten to subpoena their calls and emails?
No, sir, and there's no way to subpoena phone calls.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying. I'm reading what the press said.
I would suggest that you not rely on what the press says, sir.
Well, I didn't ask if there's no way to do it. I asked if you said it.
If I said what?
What I just read you.
No, I did not.
Well, now, who are we supposed to believe? Staff members who we've worked with, who've never misled us, or you guys, who we've caught hiding information from us, who tell a witness not to answer our questions, who are we supposed to believe?
Thank you for making clear it's not personal, Mr. Jordan.
Well, I'm saying the
you
Department
believe
of Justice.
Me because I'm telling the truth and I'm under oath. And if you want to put somebody else under oath and they have something different,
I know these staff members.
Respond.
Here's my last question. What's so important that you know, that you don't want us to know, that you won't give us the documents we're asking for, that the House of Representatives is about ready to go on record saying you should give us, what's so darn important that you will threaten members, at least according to media reports and according to the staff members, threat members.
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman.
What is so important, Mr. Rosenstein?
Parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chairman.
This is not an appropriate time for a parliamentary inquiry.
And point of order. The gentleman keeps representing that the House of Representatives, yes, it will be, the Republicans who continue
it's
to...
Not a, that is not an appropriate point of order.
Well, he needs to be correct in his statement.
The time of the gentleman... The gentleman
will
be restored
the members
in
of the Republican
the,
Party.
The gentleman will suspend. The time of the gentleman from Ohio will be restored for an additional 15 seconds, and then the Deputy Attorney General will be allowed to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rothstein, Mr. Ray, I do appreciate your work, but... I'd also appreciate if the House of Representatives could get the information. We have repeatedly, Mr. Gowdy talked about how long this investigation is going on, how long there's been a special counsel. We started asking for information in July of last year, and some of that is still not given, still has not been given to the Congress, still not has been given to this committee, the committee charged with defending the Judiciary Committee. So I appreciate what you do. I just want the information, and we're so frustrated that there is now a resolution on the floor of the House in just a few minutes that will be voted on.
Yeah, time of the gentleman has expired. Mr. Rosenstein will be allowed to respond.
I don't have any control over what resolutions you vote on, sir, and
I know you
feel free to do that. But
the gentleman will suspend it. The time now is the Attorney General's.
If you're interested in the truth, Mr. Jordan, the truth is we have a team of folks. They're Trump appointees and career folks, and they're doing their best to produce these documents. Director Ray explained to you the process. He's got hundreds of people working around the clock trying to satisfy these requests. So whether you vote or not is not going to affect it. You're going to get everything that's relevant that we
want to bet. Now, I need to say something. The president can order the Department of Justice and the FBI to release everything and declassify everything. He's not doing it. Why? I think he wants this to continue. But at some point, I think President Trump will order the release of the information thereafter. And that's when it's going to hit the fan. Timing is everything in politics. But the American people have lost confidence in the Department of Justice and the FBI. I don't trust them. They came on my door, I'd say, gentlemen, until I have an attorney, I'm not talking to you. I don't trust you. And shut the door. The perception of the American people is there's the law for the political connected, and then there's the law for everybody else. American people believe in the rule of law, but what they see going on here is scandal after scandal after scandal, and now a Republican-controlled, manned Department of Justice and FBI are not providing what Congress has asked. Now, you can say, we don't have it. We've checked. We don't have it. It's dragging your feet. Let me see if I have time to play one more. This is Louis Gohmert.
The Department of Justice, Congress couldn't see that he was friends with Peter Strzok, that was someone else. But you have added quite pointedly to Mr. Jordan that I am the Deputy Attorney General, and you certainly are. But the actions of your subordinates, which are all employees of the Department of Justice, aren't you vouching for those? Don't those people respond to you?
Those people all ultimately report to me, yes, sir.
And that would include when Bruce Orr's office was directly next to yours, I believe. Isn't that correct? And he worked for you?
He worked in the Deputy Attorney General's office. I think it was a couple of doors down, but yes.
Okay, a couple of doors down. Well, we're aware of some of the events that occurred before your confirmation as the Deputy Attorney General. However, some of your team members certainly were involved. So I want to ask, was Tashina Gahar your deputy, or Trisha Anderson involved in any stage of drafting, editing, or approving the four FISA applications to spy on Carter Page?
I wasn't sure if you were directing that question to me, but Congressman, sitting here right now, I don't know exactly who was involved in drafting what FISA application.
So just to be clear, apparently, Director Ray, you have to answer for the Deputy Attorney General about FISA applications he signed?
No, you were asking about...
The four applications to spy on Carter Page. And I think you've been a bit vague on whether you even signed
FISA. No, sir. Let me try to clarify for you, if I may.
Well, did you sign the fourth FISA application?
I approved the filing of a...
Okay, now you say you approved that application.
Sir.
Now, that's going before
a FISA... That's my job, sir.
That's your job. Okay. You approved it. Well, when you approve a FISA application, in your mind, does that mean you should read it and understand what's part of it?
You should certainly understand what's part of it, sir.
But that, you're parsing words, so that doesn't mean you need to read it, in your opinion. Is that correct?
It depends on the circumstances, sir. And
well, telling you, being a former felony state judge,
yes.
If I had somebody like you come before me, and now it was revealed later that the guy that signed and approved an application for a warrant had not even read the application that would allow spying on somebody, I would look at everything he signed from then on with a jaundiced eye. And I'm telling you, I was a little concerned about even...
Can you give me a chance to explain, sir?
Well, you have. You've said...
No, I have not.
Approve it. Well,
I did approve it.
I didn't ask that question because you've said you approved it, but you took out the words that you read it. And so it is my time.
The gentleman from Texas will suspend. I just want to make it clear to Deputy Attorney General, you will be afforded a full opportunity to respond once his time has expired. If he wants to yield to you during that
time. My time continued to run while the chairman took up some of my time. So
you'll have that too.
And actually, I was being interrupted. I did not have a question. I was taking the words that the Deputy Attorney General himself said. So, well, let me ask you about this. You said earlier Bruce Orr was not working on the Russia investigation. Let me ask you.
To my knowledge.
To your knowledge. Did you not know that Bruce Orr was meeting with Christopher Steele, getting the information about the dossier and supplying that information to the FBI at the same time his wife Nellie was working for Fusion GPS that was helping Hillary Clinton? Did you not know he was doing that for the FBI?
Correct.
You did not know that?
Correct.
Okay. So he officed a couple of doors down, but you had no idea that he was actually the go-between to get that information. So when did you find out about that?
So as I said, sir, the Inspector General is reviewing these FISAs, and I hope I have an opportunity to explain.
Well, let me just say, you look at the deputy, look at the summary. Mr. Horowitz said, we did not have confidence that Strzok's decision to prioritize Russia investigation over following up on the mid-year-related investigation led discovered on the Wiener laptop was free from bias. Pretty clear to most of us, his bias did affect that decision.
The time of the gentleman has expired.
I want to add something. The reason for this question is there were three renewals of the FISA warrant, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court warrant. Every 90 days, it has to be renewed. And who has to sign off on it? The Deputy Attorney General or the Attorney General? The reason why they're questioning him, trying to really pin him down, is he signed off on this. And that's sign-off still omitted the fact that Hillary Clinton's campaign paid for the opposition research, as did the Democratic Party. It wasn't intelligence. It was opposition research, and it wasn't disclosed to the judge. Not one, two, three, four times was it disclosed. The FISA court failed, but they failed because the FBI and the Justice Department were, by omission, misleading the court. Because had the judge on the court known that this was not intelligence, this was opposition research, they never would have gotten the search warrant, the surveillance warrant, which meant they could not frame Donald Trump. That's why this is crucial. And yes, there's a lot of embarrassment to the Deputy Attorney General. He should have known better. He just signed off on it. And there is a difference between approved and reading it. It's a rather pointed question. He doesn't want to say, well, I didn't read it. Because had you read it, you might have caught the problem. Now, he is the number two guy at the Department of Justice. I hope they impeach him or fire him. The sooner the better. Because whether he was in on the original conspiracy, he's covering it up. He should have said, I missed it. He didn't. I want to play just a little bit of, and I'm really pressed for time. I want to play some of Goodlatte's, Representative Goodlatte is chairman of this committee, Judiciary Committee. He is retiring. He's giving some background that I think you should hear.
1975 to review CIA, FBI, and NSA surveillance abuses
including the improper surveillance of an American icon, Martin Luther King Jr., and other prominent individuals. The committee also conducted a review of the insidious monitoring of political activities of citizens exercising their First Amendment rights. The Church Committee's findings resulted in passage 3 years later of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. FISA attempts to balance the need for secrecy in conducting surveillance against foreign agents with the protection of Americans' time-honored civil liberties. This history shows we have already found ourselves once before in a situation where the FBI and other intelligence agencies violated their oaths to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. In monitoring citizens' political activity, the agencies exercised their responsibilities in a manner unworthy of U.S. officials. The abuses of that bygone era, and really of any era, often happen because of power. Power to influence political currents, power to collect sensitive information, and power to wield surveillance tools in improper ways to achieve improper purposes. That power can and has been abused in the past by individuals at the highest and lowest levels of our government. Fortunately, the power of our intelligence agencies is overwhelmingly used to protect us from those wishing to do our country harm. That is the conundrum. We need our intelligence agencies to have the necessary tools and techniques to safeguard our nation, and we have to be constantly vigilant to ensure these tools are not manipulated by unscrupulous actors. The recent Inspector General's report revealed bias in the top echelons of the FBI during a hotly contested presidential election. It revealed that FBI agents, lawyers, and analysts held profound biases against then-candidate Donald Trump and in favor of his opponent, Hillary Clinton. While those on the other side of the aisle continue to exclaim that these biases are only personal political predilections that had no effect on the operation of one of the biggest investigations in our nation's history, I wonder whether these same members would say the same if text messages had turned up to the tune of "Hillary is a disaster," or "We'll stop her," or cursing her with all manner of expletives, or smugly stating that particular parts of the country smell of Hillary supporters. These types of comments were originating from people who were the fact finders in the investigation. These profoundly inappropriate comments were coming from the individuals who were making decisions on whether to provide immunity to people who had already lied to investigators, and whether subjects of an investigation could sit in on interviews with other subjects of the same investigation. These were individuals who were plainly in positions of great power with the opportunity to place greater, lesser, or even no emphasis on certain facts or interpretations of law. These actions led to complete legal exoneration of everyone involved in sending top secret emails over personal servers and unsecured emails and setting up a server for the explicit purpose of doing this. These actions even led to exposing at least one classified email to a foreign party that risked serious damage to our national security. Amazingly, considering their overwhelming biases, these people were also the very same people who were assigned to investigate the man that they hated, then-candidate Donald Trump. My reference to the Church Committee is apropos because it not only reviewed abuses by individuals, including the FBI director himself, but focused in on surveillance abuses. Here we now face the same allegations, yet in manner that goes to the heart of our democracy.
I have to wrap it up there. I recommend that you listen to the entire opening statement of Representative Goodlatte. I think he put it in the right context. It's about time that Attorney General Jeff Sessions appoint a special counsel, because this stinks to high hell. Neither the FBI nor the Department of Justice can investigate their own criminal activity. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.